Hello and welcome to Reasonably Fit. We're Jason and Lauren Pack, and this is the podcast for anyone who wants a more thoughtful and grounded approach to health and fitness.
Our guest joining us today is Lucy Mountain. Lucy has mastered the art of using humor and wit to dismantle diet culture. She's a self-proclaimed carbohydrate activist, a certified personal trainer, founder of the Knobs app, and an absolute joy of a human being. In today's episode, we discuss what is and what isn't diet culture, why reading the room is an important skill when sharing content online, and how confidence is the key to success for beginners in the gym. We had such a blast chatting with Lucy, and we know you're going to love this episode, so let's get right into it.
Oh, thanks for having me, though.
Awesome. We're so excited to have you. You were on our list from the very beginning as soon as we said we wanted to have guests.
I'm so honored.
Well, because you are a self-proclaimed carbohydrate activist. So in honor of that, we had a bagel for breakfast in your honor.
So good. I feel so on right now.
So much energy. Feel great. Bagels were actually one of the first things for me that I sort of fell into a diet culture trap with because I'm Jewish. We are very into our bagels. And I remember in college, I started to scoop the middle out of my bagel and like barely use any cream cheese, or I would like dip in cream cheese. And like, I was just trying everything I could do to still eat bagels, but make sure that I was eating as few carbs and as little calories as possible.
It's so funny. I feel like everyone has had a scooping out the bagel phase. Like the more we talk about it, like so many of us were doing it, but actually I don't think at the time we ever really like talked about it, at least me and my friends who were all clearly deep in diet culture. We never really talked about the little habits. And I can't decide whether that's because we felt like this sort of element of like shame, or whether it was so normal that we were like, yeah, that's just what you do with your bagel.
Right. Like you don't scoop out the middle of your bagel. Like that was the weird, yeah. That would be the weird person in the group. Yeah, totally. Yeah. Totally. Yeah. So, but now we've come full circle. I'm eating and it was a good hearty bagel.
Yeah. I love that. They have this bagel shop around the corner from me. And I've only just discovered it. And they do, you know, those like Instagram, like rainbow bagels, yeah, that have like all the different color breads. I saw that they did them the other day. So I went around to have one. And for some reason, I don't know if it's because it was rainbow, but it did taste better. It had like this whole like extra element to it. It was delicious.
It's like a joy bagel. I mean, what could be bad about that?
Like added serotonin into the mixture.
Exactly. So can you give us a little bit of background on sort of when you actually initially got interested in health and fitness and nutrition?
So I guess my interest started, the interest really started when I was like a young teenage girl, and the interest is always through the lens of like, oh, how can I manipulate what I'm putting in my mouth to, you know, be as little calories as possible or as little carbohydrate as possible. So I had this kind of, I guess, unfortunately, that common thought process. And then it was sort of when I went to, and bear in mind, I was never a kind of sporty, active kid, didn't really like team sports, not because I didn't enjoy them, but mostly I don't really like competition. And I think that element of stuff really sort of pushed me away from it. And also as a young woman, you're becoming more aware of your body. And I just didn't like being in a PE kit and, you know, sometimes doing it around the boys. And there was that whole side of things. And then it was when I went to uni, and I remember being in my first year, and I just joined the campus halls. And I remember being, it must have been the first week, and I was living with two girls and three guys. And I had guy friends before that. And I remember one of them, I'd never lived with a man before, like never lived with a boy before. And I was listening to them talk about these other girls on our campus halls. And they were like, you know, she's not fit, but, you know, her body's amazing. I remember just thinking like, God, it's so bizarre. I never heard a man talk about a woman's body in that way, and how it was very much separate to their appearance. Like there was two sections, the head and the body. And I remember thinking, oh my God, that's, you know, I was more conscious of my body. And I was thinking, God, my It wasn't just, you know, thinking about makeup and doing my hair a certain way and getting highlights. I was like, oh, now I need to really think about my body and how my body's being perceived in a totally different way. And, you know, I spent a lot of years at uni doing stupid diets with the classic Google search of like, what's the quickest way to lose weight in 7 days? And I'd be doing this weird egg diet and a grapefruit diet. And I'd be like writing it in felt tip and sticking it on my food cupboard because that's what everyone did. Yeah, I suppose through that, though, bit by bit, meeting different people in the fitness industry, working at a PT studio, doing marketing, moving through that, becoming a PT myself, and bit by bit started to change it. But I'd say my interest definitely started through that very toxic diet culture lens.
You said it started pretty early. You were manipulating the way you eat. Like, are you talking like middle school, like you're with your like friends and colleagues, or was it family influence? Was
Colleagues, middle school colleagues.
it your middle school
My
associates?
colleague.
Or is it family influence, or is it just media influence? Like, what do you think kind of initially sparked it?
Well, I think it's two things. So my parents, thankfully, and I was fortunate to grow up with a mum who didn't talk about her body and didn't have any sort of hang-ups around food, which was good. I would say my dad definitely did, though. And my dad would often get bullied by people in the family, making fun of his weight. And I would see that. And me and my sister were very protective. Every time it would happen in family occasions, we'd always be like seething and be really angry and protecting. But I watched at a young age my dad lose weight to become a more socially acceptable size and then suddenly be praised for that. And I've actually never really thought about that until now, but I think that definitely had an impact of like, oh, he was this size, he lost weight, and now he's being praised and he's not being bullied by, you know, other members of the family. And that was quite interesting to see, I think, at a young age, and that definitely would have had an impact. And I think also, you know, I used to love, do you guys know Heat magazine? I
No.
don't know if you know. Oh, it was like ultimate like trash magazine, but I loved it. And it would have all the celebrity gossip, and on the front cover it would be like Victoria Beckham's new crazy diet where she lost this much in X amount of time, and it would just be so addictive, and I would buy it every single week. And I would love to see a study that would look at the percentage of text and images that related to what women's bodies look like in those kind of magazines, because I suspect it would be so high. And if you're consuming that on a weekly basis, my head's just going to be constantly thinking, okay, cool, this is what we talk about as women, and this is what we do as women, and this is our worth as women. So I would say probably from the age of sort of like 12, 13.
Yeah, that would be exactly probably around the time for me as well. And we had Cosmo magazine. I don't know if you
I
have
was just going to say
Cosmo
that.
in the UK, but that was my big one. And I even think we had like a teen version. So I would get like the, and as a preteen, I was like, my parents allowed me to get like the Cosmo teen version. And then, of course, I had started sneaking like the real version, which had even more, you know, harmful messaging in there. And totally, magazines were our generation's, you know, initial introduction into diet culture, and now it's definitely TikTok and Instagram for the next generation. It's so hard because I feel like for a little while I was like, at least magazines aren't really relevant anymore, and kind of starting to think like, at least maybe we're moving forward. And I feel like there's always that hope that like maybe we're on the other side of this, and then you start seeing like body checking trends on TikTok and you're like, oh, we're not even close.
That's so funny you say that, because I often think in my head, is it better or is it the same? Is it just like morphed into a new side of things? I don't know what you guys think, but I'm always like, oh, I feel like there's more good influences and they're more accessible, but the bad is still there.
I totally agree. It was funny. I was looking into the body checking trend on TikTok because that's been coming out a lot. And, you know, now immediately when you search for, if you try to do hashtag body checking, it actually brings you to like, resources for eating disorders. Like, it won't even let you see any videos right now that have that hashtag. So of course now people are finding different hashtags to use. Like, it's, but at least there just feels like so much more awareness around the fact that that's harmful, and more steps being taken to say it, we can't keep people from doing these things. This is always sort of going to be maybe in our culture, but at least we can be telling people that this is harmful. Whereas I don't think anyone was saying that when the magazines were coming out. I mean, I'm sure there were, you know, some like really progressive people out there who were like, this is bad. But like, for the most part, it was just so normal. And I think now at least it has become a little bit more recognizable and people are quicker to say, hey, this is actually potentially really harmful.
Yeah, I think the same too. I think it's more just there are more voices, there's more information, and there's more good information now out there. And I do actually feel like, at least in the past couple of years, social media platforms like TikTok, they are becoming more aware because we've been really loud for many years. And I think that they are starting to listen. But, you know, with the body checking thing, though, it's really interesting because even that, like you say, the loopholes are, you know, on a What I Eat in a Day video, there's still that quick clip of like, hey, I'm just showing me, I'm introducing myself, but it is a body check ultimately. And it's very, and you know, if someone says, hey, I just wonder if you'd question resharing it in this format because, you know, this might be harmful, it's always through the lens of like, no, I'm just showing my, I'm just introducing myself, I'm just showing myself. And there is that such that tricky like middle ground where it is actually really hard to stop those things completely, I think. But, you know, I do agree. I think progress is being made for sure.
Totally. Yeah, I mean, the argument is always like, well, this is just my body. But it's like, then following it up with, like, of course, no one's asking you to apologize for your body or not show your body if that's your body. Mm-hmm. But following it up with, this is how many calories I eat and these are, like, the foods that I'm choosing, like, you're saying something about your body and you're trying to tell other people that they can also look like you. Like, it is a very clear message that you're sending. So, yeah, it is a fine line, but I think that it becomes very obvious once you're seeing it over and over again, like when it is more harmful and when it is just somebody being in their body, which is fine.
I think that's a really good point. And I think that reading the room is always important, and that room is always going to change depending on where things are sitting in social media and the kind of trends and how generally people are feeling. And I think as an influencer or someone making content, you know, on TikTok, everyone's an influencer because anyone can have a video that blows up, you know, 5 million views or whatever. But I think reading the room is really important. And if we lived in a world where there wasn't this immense pressure on women to look a certain way or have a certain kind of body or to lose weight, and there wasn't this crazy diet culture that is still there, posting a little like pic of you posing in front of the mirror, it wouldn't hit the same way. It wouldn't have the same reaction. But that's why I think, you know, there's nothing inherently wrong with anything, taking any sort of picture of yourself, do what you want to do. But I think reading a room is important when you're sharing content to, like, you know, potentially millions of people.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. So you personally have always used humor as a way to deliver your content. And I am like 99% sure. We had a couple that used to go to our gym that's from the UK. And I'm like 99% sure they sent me a video of you. And I couldn't find it anywhere. I'm like digging through everything trying to find it. Because I know this was like seven, eight years ago. And it was like a satire video of you outside, kind of like making fun of, not making fun, but poking fun at like a classic influencer delivering a workout. Do you have any recollection of that?
I have definitely done like jokey videos. I'm just trying to think because as you're saying that, I discovered you guys through two personal trainers that were working in the gym that I was working in at the time. And it was when you guys were actually, you were really great. I think you had like 6,000 followers and you grew really quickly to like 30K. And I remember sitting in the back room of the gym and everyone, these two personal trainers were like, look at this account, their content's so good. Like, you know, we need to get on this. Like, they're producing amazing content and they're really providing value. You know, we need to get on that. Like, oh my God, that's so cool. I love making funny videos. Like, I just think, number one, I, in general, when I'm with my friends, I am very silly as a person. And for me to be making serious content just isn't actually that authentic to me because I'm not a very serious person. So I've always found like humor is actually a really nice, like, accessible point to like talk about a serious message, but also be like, haha, I'm trying to be entertaining at the same time so it will hopefully spread further. And I also just enjoy doing that stuff anyway.
Yeah, I mean, that's literally what I wrote in my notes is like, you use levity to make your content enjoyable. And then there's this deeper message that actually sends like some serious, you know, things to think about for the person on the other side. But sometimes with anti-diet culture, it can be so serious and so negative and so like downer, because it is sad. Like, it's a sad topic, and it really is like, you know, there are really serious ramifications, but you almost don't want to listen because you're like, okay, I get it. Like, it's just kind of sad commentary. But you do such an amazing job of being like, hey, this is like really stupid. Let's make fun of it. And like, in a just really fun way. My favorite one that you ever did, or at least up to this point, because I know you have more up your sleeve, but you did a video where you compared cellulite to elbows. Do you remember that video?
My stylist one.
Dying at that. Can you give a little rundown for anyone who hasn't seen that video of what that was about?
Oh, thank you. That's really kind of you to say. And that video actually, so that was, I did it with Stylist Magazine, which is like a UK magazine. And essentially, I'm like, we want to do a little video on cellulite. Would you feel comfortable, you know, filming something? And I was like, sure. And I basically just wrote the script. And the whole premise is, the research shows that women are much more predisposed to have cellulite than men. So for something which I think when they actually did the study, I can't remember from when it was, but ultimately it was like 96% of women say, or they have some appearance of cellulite on their legs, on their thighs. And I'm like, for something that is so wildly common, it's so close to nearly 100%. Why are we still talking about it? Like, it's this random thing. So I was like, it shouldn't even have a name. It should just be like the way a lot of women and most women's thighs look like, and we don't have like a certain term. It doesn't need to have its own like thing, like it's a condition. And I was like, well, you know, we all have elbows, so you know, why don't we just like, it should just be called your thighs in the same way that, you know, people that have arms often have elbows. So it was that kind of just drawing the parallel of that. I think when you bring it down and you kind of pick apart all these like weird languages, when you think about cellulite and creams and, oh, it's a skin disorder and it's something that needs to be fixed and minimized, that makes it this like weird sort of medical condition, when I'm like, no, it's just the way that our sort of fat is sitting within our skin on our thighs. And for it to be seen as this like thing that is just this bad thing that all these women have and we need to get rid of it, just doesn't make sense, because that's how it is naturally for so many women. So
I loved it. It was a perfect way to, because it is so easy to say cellulite's normal, like let's stop talking about it, but to bring it to, you like brought the absurdity to light. Like, the way that you delivered that message was like, I'm not just going to tell you this is absurd. I'm going to show you how absurd this is by making you compare it to something that would be otherwise completely absurd. So I thought that was just a perfect way of delivering it. And you do that with so much of your content. So
yeah, I think the traditional commentary is like, you know, let's normalize this, let's normalize that. And, you know, those voices are very needed and necessary, but it starts to become this very just the same messaging over and over again. So to have you create these sort of analogies to highlight the absurdities is such a great way to let it sink in, to have a laugh about it and be like, you know what, you know, this person's right. It is a little bit ridiculous. And yeah, it's just really like kind of settles into your mind a little bit more. So yeah, it's definitely appreciated.
Thank you. And you know, you brought up a really good point there with how normalizing and saying we need to normalize this and normalize that. And you're completely right that you actually get desensitized. And I feel like we are like at our normalization max. It loses its meaning as a word now. I'm like, what even is to normalize something?
Yeah.
Well, and when does it become normalized that we don't need to talk about normalizing anymore? It's like this word. When a word is overused, I do think it is important to kind of just break it down further and think, well, what does that mean? And, you know, to normalize something, does that mean that we need to keep talking about it all the time? And if the goal is to normalize it, surely we get to a point where we don't need to say, let's normalize stuff anymore. Yeah. So, I mean, we could go down that rabbit hole. Who knows?
That's awesome. I love that. I want to talk about your bio. We're going to get to your app later, because I think it's amazing what you're doing and I really want to make sure people hear about it. But your bio on your website for your app is Fantastic. Of course it is. And I want to just read it for our listeners. So it says, if you scroll far enough back on my Instagram, you'll find me talking about my latest 14-day skinny tea detox and sharing physique updates from my uni bedroom to my 150 followers. I designed Knobs app for her. And I just love that so much because it puts you in a place for me. I was like, I mean, I could have written that. That is my experience. And I needed something to get me out of that sooner than I did. And so I want to talk about how you're doing that. But before we get to that with your app, I want to talk about the transition for you. Like, when did you start to have that realization that I am sucked down deep in diet culture? And how did you start to come out of that?
It's so funny. I don't know if you had the same experience, but there's never like that one defining thing of like, I'm just not going to do this anymore. I'm going to, you know, do something different.
Yeah.
And it is a very gradual unpicking phase. Because actually, if I'm very honest with myself, 3 years ago me is also not me now. Mm-hmm. My views have changed still, and they are always changing and evolving. And a reality check I had the other day, because I'm moving house, I was looking through all my old bits of paperwork and I was thinking, what do I need to shred? And I found this old notepad that me and my partner, so when I built Knobs, I launched it with my ex-partner at the time. And when we built it together, he was slightly more on the lens of like, he worked with a lot of weight loss clients. And although that was very much not me, the business itself, when we launched our first ever guide, our Knobs guide in 2018. And if you'd have asked me at that time, I would have been like, we're anti-diet. Mm. We don't do weight loss. There was still a little section which talked about weight loss, which I don't do now. I'm not against weight loss. It's just, I choose to not offer that in my company structure. But it was so interesting because at the time I remember thinking, we're so radical, we don't talk about weight loss. I'm like, well, actually we did have a little section in our first guide, you know, and it's not that that's bad, that's fine, you know, people want that and that people should be able to access good information on that. But you're always changing, you're always evolving, and you're always reflecting. And I think what helped me on my journey was number one, working in a, when I left university, when I was working in the studio, the one that discovered you and put me onto you guys, they had a lot of coaches who were training for strength. And I'd always been around a lot of women when it came to training, female classes. And the trainer would be like, you know, tone up the bums and tone up the legs and lose weight and stuff. And it was really interesting training around guys, actually, who were like, I need to eat this much food and I need to eat this many carbs today and I need to like gain weight and bulk and all that stuff. And you know, that's not my world I'm in now, but actually spending loads of time around men who were trying to put on weight and put on muscles was actually quite inspiring. And that did play an important part in my journey, I think. And obviously Instagram, when I used to follow people on Instagram, it'd be these little Australian models back in the day. And I think Australian influencers really like set the pace for the fitness industry. But, you know, it was still that very diet culture kind of lifestyle. But I think as more people joined Instagram and there were more content creators just following people who were really excited to lift heavy, get in the gym, and off the back of that, realize, you know, oh, actually, I probably should be eating food because I'm trying to pick up this barbell and I feel like I'm going to pass out and have a little sit down. So it's that slowly following good influencers and slowly being around people whose only goal wasn't to be smaller, but to be bigger.
Yeah, I totally relate to the not being able to pinpoint when that shift took place, because I think about that with myself a lot. And we'll talk, we'll be, Jason and I lived in our basement at night when the kids go to bed. And we're always just talking about like, I don't know, random topics while we're resting. And a lot of times it comes back to like, how did I get out of that mindset? Because Jason's been with me throughout that entire journey of scooping out my bagels to now enjoying a full bagel. And like, how did that happen? And so many times we think of like, new moments and new like shifts that took place that I hadn't even thought of before. So it is one of those things that, and it does reinforce that sometimes, I don't know if you feel this way, but sometimes you can feel a little bit like a broken record when you're repeating your same messages over and over and trying to come up with new ways to say the same thing over and over. But if we think about our journey and how long it actually really did take and how many times we had to be hit with those messages, it almost helps to reinforce that it's okay to keep going and keep talking about it, because some people just need to keep hearing it. So
That's so funny you said it, because I was thinking about that this week. I was like, I want to do this post, and I was saying I did it about zero calorie foods, and in my mind, because it's so far away now from years and years and years ago, I used to be Googling that, and I was like, do I still need to talk about this? And I thought, you know what, did a little search of my most recent in the past year, some of my most popular content that had the most engagement, and that was kind of up there, and I was like, people obviously still want to hear about this. So I just did a little reel, and it still is useful for people. It's still helpful. And you're so right. You do forget, because when I'm writing stuff, I'm like, God, I think I've said the same thing literally like 20 times now. People must be like sick of it. But you're right. And some people might not even see half your content because Instagram, is all over the place. So people don't read your content like a book. They dip in and out. It's not like a start and a finish. You can't, when you're posting, it is to you. It is a book format. It has, it's in chronological order, and you kind of assume people are watching your stories in that order and taking in every post by post, but they don't. They're like, they might not even look at your content for like 3 months and then come back to me like, oh yeah, you're right. I have been, having the little thin bagels. I need to remind myself that actually the normal ones are fine too. So yeah.
Totally, totally.
I
We
feel you. I feel you.
we've been through different phases. Like, I mean, when we had kids, like when they're newborn stage, we're like, we're not creating new content right now. So we'll repost old content and we'll get so many people being like, I've never heard it put this way. And like, this is so great. And we're like, this is from a year ago, but nobody knows. Like, nobody knows.
Yeah,
So.
you guys are really good at that, actually. It's very efficient. I think like a lot of creators are, they don't think that they can do that. They don't really see that because they're viewing their content like, the book. So
Right.
I need to do that more, actually. Save
Totally.
me some time.
Seriously. Well, so you have gone through all of those sort of shifts, and something more recent that I've seen you talk about, which I also love, is how not everything is diet culture. And I've really you had one, well, first of all, okay, question for you. Do you call zucchinis courgettes? What's a zucchini?
Courgette. We do, yeah.
Do
But
you
like, I didn't know that until semi recently. I was like, what's a
I was like,
zucchini?
what is a courgette? I guess a courgette. I was like, that
Yeah,
looks like a zucchini to me. Anyway, say things differently in the UK. That's okay. Your point was still delivered because you used images, and that very much helped me understand what you're talking about. But anyway, the post that I'm referring to, you talked about how if you eat spiralized zucchini, like because you like it prepared that way, that's not diet culture. But if you eat it instead of pasta because somebody on Instagram told you that pasta is bad for you, that is diet culture. So two things that look the same side by side could be completely different in terms of whether it's diet culture or not. And I think that's a really nuanced way of looking at it. And can you expand on that a little bit more?
I love talking about this mostly because I have definitely been that person. Maybe 2 years ago, 2020 was an intense year, and I definitely fell down that rabbit hole of being like, everything is rubbish, everything is toxic, everything is problematic. And I actually had to take some time to be like, hang on, if I'm about body autonomy, if I'm about people doing what they want to do, eating what they want to eat, I can't be like calling people out for having spiralized courgette because they just like it and it's fun to do. And I can't be saying that. So you're right. And I'd say, similar to the body checking thing, taking a picture of your body is not inherently toxic. It just depends what the intention is. It depends on the wider context. And that is almost always the case with diet culture. Yes, there will be certain products which are specifically made to play into diet culture. For example, detox teas, which thankfully have kind of disappeared now. But that's a really prime example of a product, no matter what context it's in, it is a toxic diet culture product. But most of the time, diet culture is kind of like skipping on your calories and like the bagel. There's nothing wrong about eating a smaller bagel with less filling inside, but the intention of it and the way that it's positioned tends to be.
Right.
And, sometimes you might not be hungering. You might, if you, also, like, I think sometimes you can lie to yourself, which is a hard one. This is why this is so hard and nuanced, because you could have that bagel scoop out the middle and be like, I just don't want it because I'm not hungry enough. And I just don't, and you can kind of create these little loopholes, which is why it's so important to be honest with yourself. But, there's nothing inherently wrong with food. There's nothing inherently wrong with I don't know. I'm trying to think now, like something that has less energy in it. Let's take Halo Top ice cream. I used to always be like, Halo Top is so toxic, Mara. And you know, their branding's questionable, whatever. If someone genuinely likes it and eats it, that they can do that. They don't need to be told that's wrong if they actually just enjoy it. So I think, yeah, it's so easy to fall down that trap. And I do think, kind of like what you're saying with the diet culture side, it does sometimes feel like it's too negative and it's too, everything is wrong and everything is bad. And I've definitely played into that at times in my own, you know, journey online. But the longer I'm in it, the more I'm kind of like, oh, I just don't want any labels. I don't want any size. I just, eh.
Yeah, I totally get that. I do. I love, I don't know if you have this in the UK, but have you heard of like the Zevia soda? It's like soda made with stevia.
I haven't. Is it like a kind of like sugar-free drink?
Exactly. Yeah. And I
Okay,
really like, I've always liked diet soda. And I found this one and it's diet, it's root beer. It's not even called diet root beer. It's called like, it's just called root beer, but it's made with stevia instead of sugar, which is like, it's all the same. Like I'm not drinking it because I'm trying to replace sugar. I'm drinking it because I genuinely really like it. And I do think that that's one of those things where like when you made that post, I was like, oh, that's very similar to my whole root beer like habit, which is that I just enjoy it and I just really like it. And I'm not in a place right now where I'm doing that because I'm really wishing I could have a full regular root beer. Like, I actually don't like the taste of it. So it's not diet culture,
Same.
it's just what I enjoy.
Yeah. I did a TikTok a few months ago, which is like, I love white monsters, right? And people think I'm like a weird gamer, trucker, whatever, because they've got this like gaming trucker community. But like, I just love my white monsters, and I don't have the normal ones, which are like 400 calories in a can. This one's 0 calories in a can. I'm not thinking, oh, I want that other one. I'm like, the normal monster tastes disgusting to me, and I don't want that in any capacity. And people will be like, why? I've had a couple of DMs before, and I know that if someone's DMing me about this, I know it's from like a troubled place. So I always am very sort of like empathetic. But someone being like, you know, you say you're anti-diet, but you're drinking 0 calorie monster. And I'm like, I just love it. It tastes like lemonade. It's so delicious. Have you tried it? But it is funny. And I think that's all the more reason that, like, you know, nuance is hard on Instagram because you have a square and you have a bit of text, and you know, obviously there's going to be inconsistencies in everything that you share. But yeah, I think it's important to talk about that side of things, though.
I think that's where what's really nice about your approach is that it's so calm and so thoughtful. Like, you know, when any type of movement that is combating against a different problematic movement, you start to get the early voices that are saying like, hey, wait a minute, this isn't great. And then it hits this sort of tipping point where suddenly a lot of other voices come into the picture and say, yeah, that's not good. That's not good. And then like becomes this whole other problematic wave becomes it becomes dogmatic in its own right. And so then it's kind of like up to influencers like yourself to kind of bring it back a little bit, being like, actually, there's a gray area, there's nuance in this. We can't just be dogmatic on either side. Let's try to find that middle space where we can all find common ground. And I think you do that really well in a very simplistic and light way, which is really nice.
Thank you. I definitely there was definitely a time where I felt more connected to the fitness industry, and I had more, I don't want to say like close friends, but I had more people that I would speak to within the industry. And I think when you all get together and you're all like of a similar, have a similar message, sometimes it can feel to you like, oh. And I was like, oh, this whole thing is giving me anxiety. I need to take a little step back. But it's funny, you're right, it's like that group mentality. The group can become a mob very easily if you're not careful. And you know, you can kind of like egg each other on, like, yeah, this is bad, this is wrong, this person's this and this is this person's that. And I don't know about you both, but it's actually really nice. I spend 99.9% of my time with people that don't work in fitness, and actually, you know, it's actually really nice because, you know, you've got different things to talk about. And when you work in it all day and your business is that, sometimes it's too much when you only speak and make effort with people who also are into fitness and also think the same thing that you think. So yeah, it's nice to have that separation.
Yes. I'm sure. And I wonder, does that help you a lot in then coming back to work with sort of fresh eyes as opposed to just being in the fitness industry? I mean, one of the things, let's get into your app a little bit, because one of the things that you're doing with the Knobs app is you have a very beginner friendly program, and truly beginner friendly, which is very, very difficult to find in the fitness industry right now. And I think that's partially because people in the fitness industry are only surrounding themselves by other people either in the fitness industry or already working out. And it's very hard to understand what a true beginner actually needs. So do you feel like that's contributed, just having friends outside of fitness has contributed to putting that together?
100%. And, you know, one thing that I say with Knobs is that when I've had meetings with people and we talk about business and, you know, with certain developers, they'll be like, you know, we need to make sure it's open and anyone can join us, something for everyone. And I'm like, I've never been about that. And it's not that I don't want to be welcoming to everyone, I do, but ultimately I just really love helping people in that beginning stage of their journey, because I think I just don't get excited teaching someone how to squat their body weight as much as I do with like just learning to hip hinge in the gym with no, like that makes me so much more excited. And I'm much more, I love like the kind of confidence side of things and the aspect of things that is more around making someone feel good beyond lifting X amount. So, you know, I've been that person buying fitness guides, and back in the day, I remember my first ever workout PDF that I did had 7 workouts in a week, and that was a beginner program. And I remember thinking in my head, 7 workouts, is this normal? And they'd wrote in the plan was actually 5 days of training, because 2 times a week you train twice a day, one in the morning, one in the evening. And I was like, this is normal, this is what beginners do, this is what people who go to the gym do. And I was thinking about that the other day, actually, but I really saw this need for something that wasn't, okay, workout one, you know, use this machine, or, you know, I actually launched my School of Knobs, which, so basically when we launched Knobs app, we did have beginner plans, but one thing I kept noticing was actually the confidence side of things. I can give someone a plan, I can tell them what exercises to do, how to do it, and it can be really tailored to their ability level physically. But confidence is actually, I think, the biggest roadblock. It's not just knowing what to do, it's like the anxiety of signing up to a gym online and getting your clothes ready before you go and walking there and thinking, what the hell is going to be in there when I get in there, how do I use my locker, how, you know, all that stuff. So we designed this school, which, you know, half of it is education on what to do, but the other half is like what to expect on your first day, and don't worry if this happens, and how to respond if someone says this to you, or, you know, all those little things where you can like protect yourself and like prepare yourself for certain situations that you're thinking in your head. 9 times out of 10, no one's going to talk to you, no one's even going to look at you, you know. But it does help to like be prepared with those kind of things, and that's what we do with the school, which is like super, super beginner level.
That's amazing.
You can tell you've actually have interacted with people and complete beginners, because when you talk to your everyday and fitness influencer, it's like, oh, they need to know the right plan, they need to know the right sets and reps. Oh, they just don't know the form. That's why they're not, you know, staying consistent on their fitness journey. But it's like everything around that is what's the foundation of it all. You know, the sets and reps and exercise form, that's kind of like secondary to all that. But like, you have to get them comfortable. Mm-hmm. You have to reduce their anxiety. You have to get them just more accustomed to that sort of atmosphere, and like, you got to get them comfortable. And that was like one of the big things for us when we opened our gym, was to create this atmosphere that felt welcoming and inviting for everyone. Less so about like all the technical stuff, like, which we love, but we realized that it's more about just getting them to step foot in the door and knowing that they belonged right away. And I think that's such a key overlooked factor, especially working with beginners.
That shone through, you know, all your community. Everything was very, very, very community based when you were doing photos of the gym or videos of the gym. And that is essentially what beginners need. And, you know, those spaces are not, it's not a common thing to have a really welcoming gym environment. It's not that it's unwelcoming, it's just that it's very like, you go in, you book online, There's not even anyone at the desk. You just like do your little coding, you go in and then you do your workout and everyone's separated. One of the things that I did last year was actually join CrossFit, and I'm like, I've never done CrossFit before, but I just wanted to meet people. And being a beginner at CrossFit and joining something where it felt like everyone was in a big community, and being a beginner in that kind of setting again reaffirmed, oh no, this is scary. Because I was nervous. I was like, God, I've never done this before. And I'm learning new skills and entering this space with all these other people who you assume know everything, like you do in a gym. But then you realize you get speaking to people and you realize everyone else feels the same. You know, everyone else feels nervous. Everyone else feels, because everyone's ultimately inside, everyone's worried and has these concerns. Even the big gym bros in the corner, you know, often those people are the most nervous, the most insecure.
Totally. We actually, when we closed the gym, we were like trying to figure out, like, we were kind of in this in-between space where we hadn't moved to our current house. And we were like, we have to go join a gym somewhere. Like, we have to, we love to lift. Like, it was, we wanted to find somewhere. So we just joined a local, like, $10 a month gym. And my first day, I was terrified. I was like, I don't remember how to be a member of a gym. Like, I owned a gym for 8 years and I like didn't know what to expect. I was nervous. I was like, wow, this is so helpful to have this experience, because now we can actually even relate more to what most people are going through when they're walking into a space like that. So.
Yeah, I love that. I really love that.
Is knobs for no BS? Like, what is knobs? What's the name?
It is, yeah. So essentially, before I launched Knobs, I used to always be like, I'm no bullshit. I'm a no bullshit personal trainer. And I still think that, but it kind of just started as no bullshit. And then when we launched our first plan, it was the no bullshit gym plan. And then it became Knobs just from no BS. So it was like no bullshit, no BS. And then we just like made it Knobs. And what was really special about the name was because we had a Facebook group that we were running when we launched our first plan. And it was Team No Bullshit. And then it was Team No BS. And then eventually the people, our members in the group just started saying, hey, Knobs. Like they were calling each other Knobs because they just like closed the gap. And I'm like, let's just change the name to Knobs. It's just a bunch of knobs. Well, everyone calls each other knobs. And
I
it's
love
so
it.
funny when I like speak to like a solicitor or a lawyer or someone who's in that kind of very corporate side of things, and they're like, so is it knobs? Is that the name of it? I'm like, yeah, it's knobs, NABS.
It's so funny because Jason was like, does
Good.
NOB stand for no BS to me? And I was like, oh, I thought it was like a British way of saying newbie. Like that. I was like, it must
Like
be
a
a.
noob.
Yeah.
Yeah. No. We
But
get
he was
a
right.
lot of questions about
Well, that's fun because
that.
it brings some intrigue to the story, so that's cool.
Yes. Yes.
Can you
It's
give
an
us,
icebreaker.
yes, can you give us some examples of how a beginner-friendly program should actually look? Like, what are some considerations that you're making for true beginners when you're writing a program for them?
So when I'm thinking about my beginners, I'm thinking about where they're going to be in the gym. So often you'll find with plans, especially when they're not designed in a sort of commercial gym setting, it'll be like, use this bit of equipment here and go to this section here. And even if, you know, you're programming in a leg extension or a leg press, which is potentially something that a beginner may have jumped on and had a little go with before, they're still moving around the gym and they're still like, you know, they're not just going up to a machine. They're thinking about the seat positioning and they're having to think about the weights and what little thing do I put the weight in. So my beginner plans, we just stick with dumbbells, and it also means anyone that's doing my home plans who work with dumbbells can easily transition into our gym plans because the first few weeks are dumbbell only. So we just stick to very simple exercises, half body weight, half dumbbells. And that's kind of how we've designed our gym plan. The goal of the gym plan is to learn how to use bits of equipment and to feel confident going up to a cable machine and changing stuff. But I think, again, confidence is number one. So just getting someone in the gym and just saying, here's go to your matted area or wherever you can fit your workout mat And then you don't have to move. You don't need to move. You can just get a couple of sets of dumbbells. That's it. You're not going to be thinking, well, I've got one exercise here and then I need to go over there and then I'm going to use this machine and move around. And that's, for me, I think how you also build that kind of mental resilience of feeling comfortable in the gym. And it's not 10 different exercises. It's probably four or five, and the workouts are probably really short too in comparison to like spending an hour and a half in the gym. You might just spend 35 minutes and then you go. And I think it's just building it up bit by bit. But I'm even saying that, I'm like, my senior knobs who are doing the highest level plan, they're not in the gym for an hour. They're in the gym for like 45 minutes, maybe 50 minutes. But I see a lot with these beginner plans or just gym plans in general. It's like 12 different exercises and targeting every different area. I'm like, what are we doing this for? So yeah, we start very small.
I love that. That's such a
It's
good
so
piece of
smart.
advice to for listeners who like are potentially not comfortable in the gym yet. Like, perfect piece of advice. If you can't do Lucy's program for whatever reason, just go into the gym and pick up a pair of dumbbells and start doing some exercises that you've seen before. Like, that's so helpful because then you don't have to worry about, am I gonna accidentally steal someone's equipment, or am I gonna move in a way that I'm not supposed to? Because also, as you're doing that, you're observing what's going on in your environment as well. So you can be in your comfortable little mat space, but you can be looking around and seeing during your rest sets, like, or during your rest breaks, seeing, okay, what is the general way that people are interacting with each other, or what are the ways that people are moving around the space? And then you can start to build up that confidence. But having that as an initial like goal is just go in, don't take up too much space. And that's actually, now that I say that, that's funny because a big thing for like specifically toward women in going into gyms is like, don't be afraid to take up space.
Yeah.
But it's
But
like, actually,
sometimes you're like, no, I
yeah,
don't want to.
exactly. Like, that could be a really intimidating thing to hear is like, I don't want to take up space. I don't want to be seen. I just want to stick in my little corner. And that's okay too. And that can get you to a
Such a
point
good
where then
point.
you aren't afraid to take up space. So.
That's such a good point.
It's so overlooked, the aspect of like understanding like what even a basic machine, like taking for granted that everyone knows how to operate the machine, set it to your settings. And I remember this was just last year during that sort of limbo time where we didn't have access to a gym, or like we didn't have our gym. And so yeah, we joined a local gym and they were very proud. They just got a glute ham developer, a GHD, and they just plopped it right in the middle of the room. It was like squat racks and benches and dumb, and then they just plopped this right in the middle. And I was excited because I was like, oh, our gym didn't have one, so I wanted to try it out. But as I'm doing it, like I'm setting it up, I go on it, I'm like, oh, this is too long. I come down, I set it up again. Oh, this is too short. I'm like trying to find the Goldilocks setting for me, but all the time, in the back of my mind, I'm like, people are looking at me. They think I'm an idiot. They don't know. And like, obviously, I've been doing this for, 10 plus years or whatnot. So I still have those issues. And it's like, of course, someone who is just starting their journey is going to feel like that for every single exercise. So it just makes so much sense to just have them in one spot, get some dumbbells, lower the barrier of entry. And it's such a confidence builder to then add on, more and more movements later down the road.
That's so funny because you're completely right. I think people will look at you and be like, he knows what he's doing. He's obviously going to get it straight away. But you're right. When you break it down, it's literally a piece of equipment, not just gym equipment. It's just something you've never done before that you're doing now in front of a room of people, and that is always going to like trigger you to be like, oh my God, everyone's watching me. But I went to the gym on Monday and I was using the seated row, and I needed to find this little attachment, which because it had like two of the clips, but I was looking for the one that just had the one single clip, and I couldn't find it. And I was like looking around the gym, and I felt really self-conscious, and I had to take a moment to be like, why am I feeling self-conscious? It's because I think people are looking at me knowing that I can't find something. I'm like, it doesn't make sense. Why would anyone care? And in those moments, what I really have to do is just say to myself, just slow down. Just slow down your pace of walking. Just slow it down when you're looking for something. Don't be frantic, like, I need to find this because, I need to be quick. I always just think, it's cool. I'm just gonna have a little look over there. Oh, it's not there. Cool. I'm just gonna walk back to my machine. I'm gonna go see if this guy is using it. But it's all very slow and calm, and that definitely makes me feel less like frantic. Like, Because I'm like, what am I rushing for? Like, what? Drawing more attention because I'm like racing around, be like, I can't find it.
Can you tell us a little more about the app? So we know that you have the School of Knobs, which is your beginner app, but then you also have other programs within it. Just tell us a little bit more about what people can find with that.
Yeah, so Knobs, I guess technically it's an anti-diet app in the sense that there's no diets. We don't do any sort of like meal plans or anything. Essentially, it's just really solid beginner training programs, and you know, you can grow with Knobs. We have our more senior plans too, but ultimately we really love working with people who are nervous, want to start going to the gym, maybe have been a few times and was like, oh, it's not for me, but still want to give it a go. And we, you know, we do programs, we have everything laid out, but also we have this huge bank of this is my favorite feature on the app, of our long form machine tutorial. So when you get to a machine, when it comes to your time in the plan, we show you how to do everything, and it's like I talk you through it. I show you even down to like, this is how you use a gym bench that you see, and this is how to adjust the back of a seat, and just those kind of simple tutorials. I mean, there is food on there. We have our recipes, but we don't do meal plans, and we don't tell you what to eat and how much. And it's kind of for people who really want to learn how to train, weight train, and people who are just so sick of being told to be motivated by what their body looks like and be constantly hit with weight loss messaging. We don't talk about weight loss on the app. It's funny as well, because people always say, can I lose weight with Knobs? And I'm like, maybe you'll lose weight, maybe you won't, who knows. You know, that's the goal of Knobs is not to make bodies smaller, it's to help people feel strong. They'll probably put on muscle too, you know, they'll learn how to use different things in the gym and they'll feel confident. No calories, no weight tracking. The only weight tracking we have is like barbell, dumbbell weight, no body weight stuff.
You have a team?
I have, so it's myself and so my friend Josh, who is one of the people who showed me your Instagram all those years ago.
I recognize that name, actually. Yeah.
Joshua Peters.
Oh yeah, of course. Yeah. We remember Josh. We've talked with him on Instagram. Yeah, totally.
Oh, I miss you. I'm gonna go meet him after this.
Oh my god, oh, nice. Tell him we say hi. Such
oh,
a sweet person.
So, nice. Yeah.
So he's on the team.
He's so great. So he helps me with my programming.
Okay,
so
cool.
Essentially when we're writing plans, because this is the thing as well, I am not on a gym floor 10 hours a day, every single day. I'm just not. That's not how my week runs. And for Josh, he is. And it would be like such a, having him is such an essential part, because we go through the programs together, but he can also be like, you know what, from my experience, when I'm working with this kind of people, I actually don't think that this is a good idea. Let's do this instead. And I'm like, oh, so he is fantastic. So he works with me on the programming side. And then we also have our chef who does our recipes. And we have our developers as well, obviously. And I also have my Rachel, who is my PA. And she's also like one of my really close friends now. She does everything and she's just fantastic. But I couldn't just do it alone, no way. So I feel very lucky to have a team of people who are like my friends as well.
That's awesome.
That's yeah. So cool. All right, Lucy. Well, thank you so much for your time. We are such just big fans. Just really big fans of yours. We love
me too.
Your content. We just think you're doing so much good work. Can you tell people where they can find you, where they can follow you, and how they can support you?
Thank you. Yeah. So I am Lucy Mountain on Instagram and TikTok, and the app, Knobs app, is also on Instagram and TikTok. We're NOBS app on our username.
Perfect.
Amazing.
Awesome. Well, thank you so, so much for your time and all of the beautiful gems you shared with everybody today. We really appreciate it.
Oh, thank you for having me. This has been so fun. Yay. Thank you.
And now for some key takeaways from today's episode.
All right. What a great interview.
That was so much fun. We've been following Lucy for so long, and apparently she's been following us for a long time, which we didn't even realize, which is so funny.
It was It reminded me of the Ashley Mitchell interview where it's like we could have talked for so long because it was just it was like catching up with an old friend. So it was really, really nice to chat with her and meet IRL virtually.
I know. I wish we could have everyone. Someday we'll be big enough that we can just fly everyone out to the podcast studio in New Hampshire.
Yeah, right next to our master bedroom.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, it was a great time, and one of the recurring themes throughout the episode was bagels, which I thought was really funny because it was like kind of a, I didn't even think I was going to include that in the episode. I just wanted to like use it as an icebreaker to just be like
carbohydrates,
carbs. Yeah. Like for me, this was like actually a huge part of diet culture, but I wasn't even really thinking of it as that significant when I first brought it up. But then we kept bringing it up because it was such a, it really is such a, like when I think back to when I was in college and my mid 20s, like it was something that I craved all the time and just denied myself of all the time, and then created more craving for. Like it was like this cycle of craving, denying, you know, binging, which I've talked about in a previous episode, and then feeling bad and then going through that whole cycle again. And it was like, oh my gosh, if I had just let myself eat a bagel every once in a while, like I do now, it would just not have been a thing.
Yeah. Looking back at it, for those of you who don't know, Lauren and I went to college together. Looking back at it, I do feel like there was just so much, I don't know, pressure, or just like there was just so much around the meals you were eating, the snacks you were eating. And it was always like thought out. And also you felt this urge to explain what you were eating. Like the moment someone walked into a room, you're like, oh, I'm eating this, this, and this because of X, Y, and Z reasons.
Yes.
And we're like, We're just trying to get you guys to come downstairs and like drink with us right now. Like, I don't care what kind of snack you're eating. But like, you know, in hindsight, obviously, like you think that everyone is judging what you're eating and you have so much wrapped up around the food. And yeah, that was just kind of like an interesting insight looking back at old college Lauren.
Yeah. Well, even I remember one of the first times somebody pointed out the absurdity of how I would do that to me was Paul, our old roommate. And he came home and I was eating like a bowl of rice or something. Like I was having rice with my meal, which is funny to even think about now as something I was embarrassed by, because I literally eat rice at almost every meal, like pretty much every lunch and dinner. Yeah. Definitely every dinner, oftentimes lunch. But anyway, at the time I was just terrified of carbs. And I thought, I would say things like, oh, my body just doesn't handle carbs well. Like I'm just somebody who doesn't process carbs well. Like I made all this crap up of like stuff that I heard other people saying that was like, oh yeah, yeah, that's why I don't eat carbs. It's like my body just doesn't handle them well. Yeah. Meanwhile, like now that I eat a lot of carbs in my diet, I realize that I'm somebody who thrives on a high carb diet. And I just didn't know that at the time. I was trying to convince myself that I didn't. And so I remember I was like eating a meal with rice and Paul walked in, who like is just a chill guy, whatever. And all of a sudden I started explaining to him that I had just gone for a run and I had lifted that day. And that's why I was eating rice. And he was like, cool, I don't care.
I just want to play video games with Jason.
And I was like in my head, I'm like, but you're not judging the fact that I'm eating rice. And then I was like realizing in that moment how absurd it was that I was trying to explain my meal to somebody who could care less. And the fact that I felt like I needed to really said so much about where I was in my headspace at that time.
Yeah. And it's always like hindsight 50-50 type of thing where it's like you can look back and kind of laugh at yourself. But yeah, in the moment, it was just all consuming for you. And we talked about it in the previous podcast where you mentioned our other roommate, Heather, and you had this like epiphany moment with her when you discussed that she basically, it wasn't like a reveal, but she revealed to you that she rarely talks or thinks about food, rarely plans out her meals. Basically, food isn't even on her, like the back of her mind, going about her day-to-day activities. And I remember you were just like, wait, what? You don't think about food 24/7? What you're going to eat? How you're going to make it more healthy and all that? And I think that was like one of the big kind of turning points for you to try to figure out how to make food not all-consuming and more of just part of your everyday lifestyle.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it was like one of those things where she's like, I just eat because I'm supposed to. Yeah. And like, I need to, everybody needs to eat. And I eat when I have the opportunity to, or when I feel hungry. But like, it just wasn't like, for me, when I heard that, it was shocking. It was truly shocking to me, because every moment of every single day, I was thinking about food, because I was so consumed by doing the right thing, keeping certain foods out, you know, depriving myself of foods that I wanted. Like, all of these things were happening. Whereas she, Heather, like, I talked, she's the one who I talked about who I used to steal her snacks. Like, she would eat Doritos and she would eat, but she also ate salad and she also ate vegetables. Like, she just had this very relaxed, very intuitive style of eating that was just completely foreign to me at the time because I was so wrapped up in the fitness industry and diet culture and not even knowing that that was a term at that time. And I just didn't know there was another way to approach eating.
Yeah. So going back to bagels, I was trying to figure out which parts of the interview that I wanted to like splice up and put on Instagram and stuff like that. And it was tough because like every 5 minutes we were talking about bagels again.
People are like, where is this coming from?
Well, yeah, back then, I mean, it was like everything was low carb.
Yeah.
Right. Everything. So you were scooping out the insides of the bagel, but you're also like people would have snacks that were intentionally the lowest carb form snack possible. And inevitably, it kind of came down to like people were basically eating as nutrient not dense foods as possible.
Like rice cakes and...
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It was like, what's the calorie content? What is the carb content? And let me make it as little as possible. And it's like, you're eating this like bland meal that doesn't offer any nutritional value. And it's interesting because my mom actually still follows similar principles. And I can't tell my mom different because she's kind of set in her own ways. And also there's a little bit of a language barrier. Like I can't really go into the nuance of it all. And so she'll point out certain Korean snacks that she has to me. And she's like, oh, this is really healthy because it's really light. And it's like, mom, that is basically a rice cake.
But and she always calls it like diet. Like yeah, that's the word she uses, right?
When she's like, I'm on a diet. This is diet food. And I mean, it's funny to have this like podcast and have a fitness platform and have my mom say that sort of stuff. But it's an interesting thing.
Sometimes it's the people who are closest to you are the hardest to have a conversation with about that kind of stuff too, right? It's like, you know, and especially if it's your parent, you're like, you did everything for me, like to then like start to lecture them. Yeah. Like, it feels very weird. So totally get that. But all right. And the other takeaway that we wanted to talk about is the idea of how to be the most welcoming or create an atmosphere that's the most welcoming for beginners. And for Lucy, what she was talking about, which was really cool, was a lot of people aren't going to have a place like Achieve, like where we were intentionally creating a space that was welcoming for everyone and specifically like making beginners feel like they could be comfortable walking in those doors. Most people are going to be walking into your general, you know, Planet Fitness or just like a gym.
Lobo gym, yeah.
Right, that's there with, you know, machines.
Millions of machines, lots of people.
So her solution, her workaround, it was not to like one thing that one way you could approach that was like, all gyms need to change, which is a way bigger thing to like undertaking, right? And like, that is something that we are encouraging gyms to take a look at and think about and try to be more inclusive and be more open to a lot of like a range of people. But another way of going about it, which is what Lucy's doing, is providing a program that keeps people feeling confident and comfortable in a very small space within the gym. Just grabbing a set of dumbbells, going to find like a place where you can lay out a mat and just doing your whole workout there to get started. And that was such a great way of thinking about how can I create a welcoming environment in an environment that is innately not that welcoming to begin with.
Yeah, it was so smart to do it that way. Like, you know, when we were first kind of like getting into the field, we've talked about this in the podcast before, we really felt this need to do everything by the book. Everything had to be picture perfect in terms of like textbooks and science and like the program to be put together in such a certain way. But when you are so by the book, you start to lose sight of like the person in front of you, right? It's not a, this isn't like a laboratory and these aren't subjects and these aren't experiments. Like this is a person in front of you. And if the person is not confident, then they're not going to follow this perfect blueprint that you've laid out. And you really have to meet the person where they're at, where you kind of like have this balance between technical stuff and the science stuff, but also balance it between the soft skills. And we really loved a lot of the solutions that Lucy provided.
Yeah, she, I mean, the best one that we really touched upon in the episode was just having a program where it's just a set of dumbbells and just a little bit of space. And so, yeah, for me, like, just like you probably was thinking, well, like, is that the best program though? Like, yeah. You know, you start in your trainer, like back of your mind, you start going into like all the details of like putting together a really good program. Like, can you do it with just a set of dumbbells? And it's like, okay, take that out of the equation, because what she was talking about and what is so true, and we know this, is confidence is the biggest factor in getting someone to be consistent in the gym.
Yeah.
And once they've built that confidence, then you can worry about the nuances of the programming and, you know, what exercise selection would be the most ideal for each individual person. Like, all of that can be taken care of later, mm-hmm. but that will never get taken care of if they never feel comfortable stepping in the gym in the first place.
Yeah. And there's like, I mean, think about all of the YouTube style workouts where people are expected to grab a pair of dumbbells and work out. And it's like, these people would otherwise, millions of people would otherwise not be working out mm-hmm. if they were forced to go to one of these Globo gyms that are just set up to be so not welcoming for a beginner or someone earlier on in their journey. As trainers, maybe 10 years ago, we would be like, oh, we would never program that way. But now it's like, we absolutely would yeah. for a true beginner if that meant that they could get better going on their fitness journeys.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So it's a more reasonable approach to programming and to taking a step back away from what you know to be a perfect program and putting together, like, I don't even want to say perfect program. I hesitate to even say that because yeah. the perfect program is the one that works for the individual and gets the individual moving and going and consistent. So
exactly.
It doesn't matter the details always. I mean, when someone has like an extremely specific goal, and then that's when we get into powerlifting and bodybuilding and things like that, where you need to get really nitty gritty with the programming, then yes, like exercise selection matters more, sets and reps matter more. But in the beginning, when you just want to be somebody who works out, somebody who goes to the gym, somebody who wants to get stronger, let's take away all of those, like strip away all of those barriers mm-hmm. and just get moving. And if getting a set of dumbbells in your hands and not taking up too much space in the gym and just being able to walk through the doors is the way to do that, that is perfect.
Yeah. And now on another note, one benefit that we have found from the pandemic is this surge in home gyms, yeah. right? Which is another way to kind of go around not having to go to a Globo gym if that's a setting that you're not comfortable in. And home gyms are awesome. And it doesn't have to be like this decked out home gym with squat racks and like every piece of equipment. Like, truly, all you really need are some dumbbells, like maybe a kettlebell here and there, maybe a few bands, and you're pretty much good to go for the majority of your workouts, especially if you're earlier on in your journey.
Yeah, I think we've been hesitating. So many people have been asking us for a home gym tour.
Yeah.
Because we've created the gym in the basement, but we created it, first of all, we took equipment from our massive gym
yeah.
and we just kept what we knew would fit in our basement. So we already had the equipment. So we weren't like going out and buying this equipment for a home gym. We already had it. And then second of all, it's our lifestyle, like it's our career. So yeah. of course we're going to spend like more money and get nicer equipment for our home gym because it's like our job. And so we keep hesitating to do a home gym tour that everybody keeps asking us for because we're like, this isn't actually what we would suggest.
Right.
Like we're not like, you should go out and get
this
a squat rack.
This isn't a model home gym.
You need to get a dumbbell rack and a kettlebell rack. Like it really doesn't need to be that serious. It can really just be, like you said, a pair of adjustable dumbbells so that you have, it doesn't take up a lot of space and you can change the weights just on the dumbbells, or like a small range of dumbbells and a small range of kettlebells. If you're somebody who really wants to get into lifting, maybe then you get a squat stand and a barbell, but like you can really gradually increase the equipment that you have, but you can start really small and be really successful with that.
Yeah. I feel like we get emails every other day about people being like, oh, I have a squat rack, a bench, dumbbells, kettlebells, bands, a pull-up bar, stability ball. And they go on and on. They're like,
Is that enough?
I feel like it's not enough. Like it's yeah. like, yes, yeah, that's plenty. Now, having said that, gym equipment, like especially when you buy it from a reputable place like Rogue or Perform Better, like all these places, it'll last forever.
Yeah.
Right? Like it's just like basically a piece of steel. So all this stuff is going to last forever. So it is definitely like a worthwhile investment if you're kind of like building momentum and feel like you want to take it to the next level. It is a worthwhile investment, but definitely don't feel like you have to go out and get this amazing home gym set up. Like yeah. just a few dumbbells is all you need.
Yeah.
And actually something else underrated that we've often talked about is making sure that whatever environment that you're working out in, I almost think that that's more of a bigger deal than having a couple more kettlebells or a couple more dumbbells. And so having a place that is either well lit or has some, maybe some plants around it, some decor that just makes you want to be there, like speakers, like setting that space up to be a place that's kind of like for yourself and is just nice to be in, I think is highly underrated.
Totally. I know that my mom has a gym in her basement, but before she started to make it brighter and like put some like speakers down there and things like that, like it was, she never wanted to go down there because it was dark. It was cold. It was like,
I think there was one light bulb. It was like a prison situation.
Like a flickering light bulb. Like it was not an inviting environment and she never would go down there. And so once the pandemic started, she really was like, okay, this is going to be my only option. I need to make this space feel more inviting. And so that's what she did. And now she goes down there and that's where she works out and she's happy and she likes it and she's consistent. But honestly, I don't think she would if it was still that like flickering light bulb.
Yeah, totally.
You know, it's just really does make a big difference. So. Yeah. Underrated tip. All right. So overall, we loved that episode. That was so much fun. We had a blast chatting with Lucy. Like we said, could have chatted all day. Definitely go and follow her because, you know, we talked about this. This was another takeaway for me is that when we are talking about diet culture and when we're trying to break it down, like it can feel very negative. It can feel very like daunting and this big, you know, task that we have to take on and we have to stick it to the man and all the stuff. And Lucy kind of just does a really good job of making it light, making it funny. It's not a funny thing. Like it is a serious thing and she takes it seriously, but she uses humor. She uses wit. She uses her, you know, just like her natural
vibe and energy.
Yes. To present it in a way that makes you feel like, wow, this is actually really absurd. Like it almost brings diet culture to light more than when you just hear stop diet culture, this is diet culture, blah, blah, blah. Like when it's just constantly in your face, you like we were talking about in the episode, you just kind of get
desensitized.
Exactly, desensitized to it. She does it in a way that makes you think about it differently and makes you be like, oh my gosh, I can't believe I fell for this or that I'm falling for this. And I really need to reevaluate my my approach to all things fitness and nutrition. So
yeah,
and give her a follow.
And the fact that she not only speaks out against it in that manner, but also understanding what's in her control and identifying that she's now has her Knobs app, Knobs School, and has a place, a safe space that she maintains that is anti-diet culture.
Right, right.
And yeah, I just think it's a very proactive way of going about it and a very productive way of going about it. So,
totally. So Hope you enjoyed this episode. Go give Lucy a follow if you don't already. You probably already do. And that is all we've got for you today. We're excited to bring you another great interview next week. We still have more lined up. This has been so much fun for us to do and connect with people. If you have been enjoying the episodes, please go ahead and leave us a rating and a review wherever you listen to podcasts.
And until next time,
sweat out,
happiness in. Woo.